This is a special edition of Radioactive, a grassroots environmental and social justice news journal with Meredith DeFrancesco. Today is May 27th, 2025. As stops, arrests, and detentions of immigrant residents within Maine have escalated, including those with work permits, green cards, or in the legal process of seeking asylum, the Maine legislature is currently considering two bills that would curtail the state's active complicity. LD 1259 would prohibit state and local law enforcement from doing the work of federal immigration and customs enforcement, ICE, through so-called 287G contracts. A second bill, LD 1971, would prohibit state and local law enforcement from stopping, arresting, or detaining a person solely for immigration enforcement reasons. The Trump administration's national strategy of unfettered mass deportations and a campaign of fear includes enlisting the cooperation of state and local police forces to make immigration arrests and the use of county jails throughout the country. Thus far, six states reportedly have already passed policies that prohibit state law enforcement to enter into 287G agreements with ICE. They are California, Connecticut, Illinois, New Jersey, Oregon, and Washington. Currently, the only town in Maine that has entered into a 287G agreement with ICE is Wells. After sharp public outcry, however, the town has postponed their agreement, saying they are awaiting the results of this pending legislation. Both proposed bills had a public hearing in Augusta last Monday, May 19th, with overflow attendance by those giving in-person testimony supporting the legislation. The Maine County Commissioners Association and members of the Sheriff's Association are opposed to the legislation, citing desire for flexibility and concern about federal funding. The work sessions on the bill are tomorrow, Wednesday, May 28th at 1 p.m. The Judiciary Committee is still accepting written public comments as they consider whether to pass the bills out of committee for a full legislative vote. Also on May 19th, the Cumberland County Commissioners in Portland heard from a number of people opposed to their county sheriff's department entering into 287G agreements. That evening, the sheriff's office stated it had no interest in doing the work of ICE and would not be entering into an agreement. The Cumberland County Jail, however, does allow ICE to house dozens of immigrant detainees from arrests in and out of the state, and the department engages in so-called detainers, holding those with immigrant status until ICE can take custody. We spoke with the sponsor of LD 1259, an act to enhance public safety in Maine by defining the relationship between local and federal law enforcement, Bangor State Representative Amberine Reyna, as she stood outside the State House to speak with a demonstration of supporters.
So I'm sponsoring a bill, LD 1259, which addresses the relationship between ICE and local law enforcement, and it asks for us to not enter into these 287G agreements, which essentially deputizes our local law enforcement or our sheriffs to do the job of the federal government for them. These 287G agreements should not be the norm, and absolutely there's pressure put on us from the federal government to enter into these agreements. We just want to make sure that our local resources aren't being used in a way that's going to cause expensive liability, erode the trust that we have between our municipalities and our local immigrant communities. And as we've seen this trend over the last couple of months, it doesn't matter if you're lawfully present, it doesn't matter if you're in a process to seek asylum. People aren't getting their due process when they're having these interactions with immigration enforcement, and it really just doesn't feel safe for people at all. Situations like this don't just erode the relationship between the immigrant community and law enforcement. People are fearful right now. People aren't sending their kids to school. They're not accessing food pantries. They're not going to their healthcare appointments.
Prior to her testimony before the Judiciary Committee at the State House, we spoke with Presente Maine founding director Crystal Krohn on the community impacts of ICE and state law enforcement's unconstrained operations.
I work with Presente Maine, which works with Afro and Indigenous Latinx people who have been displaced and made Maine their home. They're humble, hardworking, proud people. They work in the tourist industry. They work in agriculture. They work in all the areas that we Mainers love to call the pride and joy of Maine. And yet, not passing this bill would allow local law enforcement to target them. And there's really no way of knowing who's undocumented or not undocumented. So we believe that if this isn't passed, it will lead to more racial profiling and less safety in our communities.
And as we've seen nationally, whether someone is documented or not documented doesn't even seem to matter whether they are arrested when we're talking about people who are green card holders or who are legally within process to seek asylum.
Yes, exactly. Our immigration system allows people to come here to seek asylum. And that process itself is not illegal. It's supposed to be open to anyone who's leaving their country of origin, looking for a better life and looking for a place of safety. Imagine leaving your home, trying to find security elsewhere, trying to find security in a country that says that it values people who are fleeing persecution and providing a safe haven, and then you come here and for a minor traffic violation you get pulled over and suddenly you're in detention. And these are people who are integral to the fabrics of our communities. They have kids here. They have local businesses. They contribute so much, especially in a state like Maine that is aging and needs, you know, a younger working population. And to have people here that are excited to make Maine their home, we need to appreciate that and invest in that. Otherwise, people won't come to Maine anymore and we'll be in a worse position.
To the extent of your knowledge, what sort of arrests have been being made? How have these new policies already impacted communities?
Yeah, so as a community-based organization, oftentimes we are the only line of information or line of support for many community members. So we do get those calls when arrests have been made from family members whose spouses or children or brothers or sisters haven't come home, and we're working to locate them. And oftentimes the process happens so quickly, they're held in a municipal or county jail and then shipped out of state. So it's very scary, and it doesn't allow people to even engage in any sort of process, right? No matter your immigration status, the Constitution is supposed to protect anyone who is in this country, and we're supposed to have access to due process, and we see how that's not happening at the federal level. And so that's another thing for our lawmakers to really think about. Do we want that weight, that liability on our state? Do those officials want that liability on their shoulders? If we're engaging in a system that is already breaking the law, do we want to be the pipeline of sending people into that?
Do you have an idea of numbers and or circumstances that folks have been arrested and thrown into the system so far?
So what we've seen so far in Maine is that people are getting picked up just to and from work. We have a lot of people who work in construction. You know, they're building these beautiful homes that people from in and out of state with wealth are, you know, have their summer homes. And they're traveling from southern Maine to central and sometimes northern Maine to work on these projects. And when they're on the way there, when these workers are going to their work site, the law enforcement sees, you know, a crew van, a work van, and brown faces, and they pull them over, and then suddenly they're detained, and it just all happens so fast. So, yeah, we don't even, there's no rhyme or reason to the way that they're targeting or profiling people. It's just who they're finding on the highway as they're making their way to work.
And so far, have we been seeing that, to the best of your knowledge, been ICE agents, or already we're seeing state and local law enforcement participating in those, in the, those profiles and pickups?
Both. We've seen Customs and Border Patrol, and then also local law enforcement doing a routine stop and then contacting the feds and then transferring them to the feds. I'm based in the Portland area, and we know that at the Cumberland County Jail, there's over 80 people being detained right now. But from the stories that we've heard from other reports across Maine, it's several dozen people by now that have been detained and transferred elsewhere.
Out of state?
Yes.
You are an organization trying to offer resources, but what kind of resources can even be offered if people are just being picked up and ferried away and not able to call someone? What is the line of defense here in Maine, your organization, Maine ACLU? Can you give an idea of what that line of defense is?
Yeah, it's a multi-pronged approach. You know, one is knowing your rights so that you can mitigate harm as much as possible. The more that I know my rights, the more that I'm able to act on them, the more I'm able to enforce them, the more I can protect myself from knowing what rights I have. And the same goes for allies, right? Somebody in the moment might be frozen when they're having an encounter with law enforcement. So if you, as an ally, know what rights the person has, you can intervene, you can remind them, you can share that information with other allied groups. Knowledge is a really important way that we can fight against corruption.
We will further examine community response networks in a future program. The Maine ACLU also provided testimony in support of both bills curtailing or prohibiting Maine's active participation in ICE operations. We spoke with staff attorney Anahita Sotuhi to explain the ways state law enforcement can be conscripted or complicit with ICE.
Yeah, my name is Anahita Sotuhi. I go by Anahita. I am a staff attorney at the ACLU of Maine. So just by way of background, there's a few different ways that local law enforcement can work with ICE. So one of those ways is that the local jail can have what's called an IGA, Intergovernmental Agreement, or an IGSA, Intergovernmental Service Agreement. They can have that agreement with ICE. And under that agreement, what they do is they basically rent a bed out to ICE, and ICE can use that bed to detain a non-citizen, typically for however long they like. So in Maine right now, Cumberland County Jail has one of those agreements. So does Somerset County Jail, and as does Hancock County Jail. Another way that local law enforcement can, again, work with ICE is by having what's called a 287G agreement. This is a contract that they enter into with ICE, and under that contract, the local police department agrees to do quite a lot of ICE's work for it, essentially, without any payment. Those agreements are really, really troubling to the ACLU for a few different reasons. One of those reasons is that under the agreements, the local law enforcement has the authority to interrogate anyone who they believe to be a non-citizen. And that can mean anyone could be a non-citizen, right? So the end result of that can be that the local law enforcement are interrogating anyone who looks and sounds like they don't belong here. That in turn can lead to racial profiling, which in addition to being inherently morally bad, is also legally bad, right? So that can expose the local police department to a lawsuit, which is really expensive. Those agreements can also be a really big negative for the community because they are just plain really expensive, because the local police department is agreeing to do ICE's work for it, but without any reimbursement. And that can just really add up in terms of personnel costs, like overtime, buying more equipment. And we know that that's a very genuine problem because towns across the country have entered into these agreements and they've done things like had to raise property taxes to cover the costs, or they've just withdrawn from the agreements altogether because they are so expensive. So that's another way that local law enforcement can cooperate with ICE. And then there's a third way that the jails can work with ICE is by honoring ICE detainers. So a detainer is just an automated form that ICE sends out to jails saying, can you please hold on to this person for 48 hours after they should be released so that we, ICE, can decide whether or not we want to come and get them. But these detainer forms, you know, they're not judicial warrants. A judge hasn't signed off on them. They're typically not supported by probable cause. So when the jail obeys them by continuing to keep a person in custody, that can be a really serious Fourth Amendment violation, which again exposes the jail to legal liability and all the expenses that come with that. So those are really the three primary ways that we see. I would sort of emphasize that for each of those ways, what's universally true is that they are a really significant drain on local resources in every respect, and that they all can and often do lead to civil rights violations.
You are listening to a special edition of Radioactive, a grassroots environmental and social justice news report on WERU-FM 89.9. as stops, arrests, and detentions of immigrant residents within Maine have escalated, including those with work permits, green cards, or in legal process of seeking asylum. The Maine legislature is currently considering two bills that would curtail the state's active complicity. LD 1259 would prohibit state and local law enforcement from doing the work of federal Immigration and Customs Enforcement, ICE, through so-called 287G contracts. A second bill, LD 1971, would prohibit state and local law enforcement from stopping, arresting, or detaining a person solely for immigration enforcement reasons. Both proposed bills had a public hearing on May 19th, with massive public attendance opposing ICE operations. The work session on the bills is Wednesday, May 28th, tomorrow at 1 p.m. The Judiciary Committee continues accepting written public comments. LD 1971 is sponsored by Representative Dequa Dalek of South Portland. The bill is titled An Act to Protect Workers in This State by Clarifying the Relationship of State and Local Law Enforcement Agencies with Federal Immigration Authorities. Representative Dalek has shared the bill would prohibit state and local law enforcement agencies from engaging in immigration enforcement activities, including detaining individuals based on immigration holds or warrants, unless there is a serious public safety threat. It clarifies the permissible scope of collaboration between law enforcement agencies and joint task forces, emphasizing that cooperation cannot be solely based on immigration status. It would establish protections for immigrant detainees, including informing them of their rights before interviews with immigration authorities and prohibiting discrimination based on immigration status. And the bill would prohibit state employees other than law enforcement officers from inquiring into immigration status unless the inquiry is required by law or necessary to provide a service. Representative Dalek asserts LD 1971 would protect public safety by clearly defining the role of Maine law enforcement and state employees, and would ensure local officers focus on local priorities and maintain the trust communities need to keep everyone safe.
Good afternoon, Senator Carney and members of the Judiciary Committee. My name is Lisa Paricio, and I'm here today from the Immigrant Legal Advocacy Project, or ILAP, to urge you to support both LD 1971 and LD 1259. For the federal administration to carry out its agenda of deporting at least 1 million people a year, which is broadly and indiscriminately targeting all immigrant communities, it needs the public safety resources of local law enforcement. This is happening in two ways, through affirmative programs like 287G and in the absence of guardrails in state law. This absence of guardrails, which is covered in 1971, permits local law enforcement to step outside of their jurisdiction and divert our state's public safety resources towards civil immigration enforcement, the same as 287G agreements. My written testimony elaborates on why there is no legitimate underlying public policy purpose for local law enforcement to do this. Laws and policies, or the lack thereof, that permit this are based on false narratives about immigrants and claims that there is some kind of link between being an immigrant and criminality. No such link exists. In the past months, ILAP has identified at least 10 Maine residents with valid work permits who were handed over to immigration officials by local law enforcement based on their immigration status alone. The chilling effect of local law enforcement doing this has created terror across our state and is harming our workforce. Here's an example. Sarah's in her 30s and lives in Auburn. She was previously the victim of a crime. Because she was brave enough to come forward and report it to police and assist in the investigation, she's eligible for a visa, which is pending. Sarah works in the food services industry. She recently got a great promotion, but turned it down because it would involve her driving to Augusta, and she is too terrified that police would pull her over on her longer commute and she would be detained and deported. Here's another example. Natalie was driving through Oxford County when she saw there had been a car accident. Concerned for her fellow human being, she stopped to help. When local police showed up on the scene, they profiled her and inquired into her immigration status and then called immigration officers. Natalie was lawfully seeking asylum and was taken from the side of the road and whisked to a detention center on the other side of the country. In Waldo County, Robbie received an urgent call from his nephew one night who had been pulled over by a sheriff. He showed up to help. When he showed up to help, the sheriff profiled him and asked about his immigration status. He had no criminal record, was in a lawful process, and had a valid work permit, and he was taken and detained. This next story is specific to 1971 and explains why the prohibition on ICE detainers is incredibly important here in our state. Patrick is 23 years old, lives in Portland, and as a child in his home country experienced severe child abuse and witnessed friends killed by the police in front of him. He made his way to Maine. Given his depression and flashbacks, he turned to alcohol to try to cope. He was in a Maine jail related to alcohol use when he realized he was being held past his release date. He was never given a copy of the detainer, which would be required under LD 1971, and the jail refused to tell him or his ILAP attorneys what was happening. Eventually, the jail handed him over to ICE. Had LD 1971 been in place, Patrick would be free. Now, he, who is an asylum seeker, is at risk of life-threatening deportation. Please support these bills.
Prior to hearings on May 19th, a demonstration gathered outside the State House in Augusta.
I'm Trish. I'm from down East Maine. I have come down here. I was going to come down for all three bills that were looked at, but the divestment bill, unfortunately, has been postponed with no date given. I am still here to support the anti-ICE and other law enforcement agencies. We want to see it made so it is illegal here in the state of Maine that other police forces cannot join with ICE, because then we've lost any kind of humanity in our treatment of people, because ICE and any other police force that's working with them, they use whatever set of rules works best for the situation to justify them picking up anybody that they feel like picking up for any reason. We have entered a police state, and we no longer have to show due cause to pick somebody up. And between the various law enforcement agencies, they can pick them up anywhere, take them to any jail, keep them as long as they want without phone calls sometimes, without any form of legal representation. And we don't know once they enter the system where they're going to end up. So it's almost impossible to track them. We're here to try and slow that down and make this country open up its eyes and find its soul again.
Yeah, absolutely. My name is Violet. I live in the Greenbush area. And I came out here today because I just believe that people should have the right to exist. You know, people should not have to be afraid that they're going to be drug out of their homes or their vehicles or their schools or their workplaces. Like, that's terrible. Like, nobody should have to deal with that kind of stuff ever. And it's absolutely unfathomable that that kind of thing is happening right here in the United States, where we have made so many efforts over so many generations to prevent that kind of exact thing from happening. There's no choice but to stand up. There's no choice but to stand up and fight against that kind of oppression, because it's just unacceptable.
In addition to the May 19th hearing before the state legislature, the Cumberland County Commission in Portland also heard from a number of community members that day on the impacts of escalated ICE operations in southern Maine communities. Though the Cumberland County Sheriff's Department said they would not engage formally in 287G contracts with ICE, the Cumberland County Jail does allow ICE to house dozens of immigrant detainees from arrests in and out of state. And the department engages in so-called detainers, holding those with immigrant status until ICE can take custody. We will follow up on this story in future programs. Many who spoke that evening were teachers or those who worked in healthcare, housing, or food banks.
Hi, my name is Katie Riley. I am a healthcare provider. I live in the Back Cove. I work for a healthcare nonprofit. And in my day-to-day work as a healthcare provider, I take care of a lot of New Mainers and a lot of marginalized folks in general who are being targeted by this administration. I have never, in the 20 years that I have been in healthcare, had such extensive everyday conversations with the people that I'm taking care of about their fears about how they are being targeted. New Mainers ask me all the time if their healthcare is confidential, if the fact that they are receiving sensitive health care is going to affect their asylum statuses. They're scared. I worry that they'll stop coming.
We have to have safety plans to shelter in place, evacuation plans, and now we have to independently develop plans for if ICE shows up at our schools and how we will protect our students. I tell my students that my number one job is to keep them and their classmates safe. kids don't know if their parents are going to be there when they get home from school. Their parents have to make plans for if their kids get off the bus and they're not there because they've been kidnapped on the street. It's horrifying. So Portland Schools hasn't really been clear about their response to this because the city hasn't been clear. So we're here to ask you to be clear about our response, that we will not comply with this. We will not be complicit in the abuse and the harassment and the hate that is happening, and that we will protect our people, including the immigrant population. They are our people too.
I'm Sue Anderson. I'm a Portland educator and a Portland resident. I teach high school to multilingual learners here in Portland, and I'm speaking off the cuff because I've been busy preparing lessons and actually teaching. Teaching's been really rough these days. Over the years, Portland schools and the city of Portland has done so much to make people feel safe when they come here. You are welcome here. We know you have assets. We're going to help you draw your assets and be all that you can be in our community. Are we going to still be like that? Is that who we're going to be? Because it's not who we're being now. Right now, we're being complicit in unlawful and inhumane actions towards people that prior to this we were welcoming and being a safe place for. You know, we're lucky that students are still coming to school. In many places, students are dropping off and they're not coming to schools because their families don't feel safe sending them. By and large, students are still coming to my classes, but I'm telling you, they're not the same. We're causing harm. These are people who've suffered from trauma, from being threatened to join gangs, people being murdered in their families, extreme poverty, war in their countries. They've come here, and as we try to treat their trauma now, we're re-traumatizing people. And that's not what we're about in my school, and that's not who we've been in Portland, and I sure hope that's not who we are in Cumberland County. Nobody belongs in jails because they came to a place for safety.
Hi, everyone. My name is Kate Fahey, and I live in Westbrook. I spend my time working as in helping immigrant community members and their families look for meaningful work here in the community. And I can say that everyone that I meet with is so excited to be a part of this vibrant community and really looking forward to bringing their skills, their experience, their passion into the community, integrating into the community. The amount, as has been said, the amount of fear that I hear from people at this time is truly immeasurable. We saw someone last week who had recently received an email from DHS telling her that she had to leave the country within the next 7 days, and if she did not leave, she would be found. They said that her work permit would be shut off, her parole would be shut off. This is someone who entered the country legally, is seeking asylum. And none of those, her work permit was not shut off. Her parole was not shut off. This was just a fear tactic. It was a cruel fear tactic. This woman has 3 children. She was in stable housing at the time and moved herself and her 3 children out of her apartment immediately after receiving this email, doubling up with family and friends in the community. Just like actually think about that. Like think about what receiving an email like that would mean. The amount of fear for yourself and for your kids. I think that's really important to actually put ourselves in people's shoes and imagine what that must be like. We have been in conversations with community organizations where we are talking with immigrant community members about the need to plan for who will pick their children up at school if they're detained. These contingency plans are real and terrifying and heartbreaking, or they should be. And none of these policies make any of us safer. I mean, of course, this is not just targeting folks that are seeking asylum or refugees, but in our community, that is a big portion of the folks we're talking about here. And it should be known that that is an international human right. It is recognized internationally that everyone has the right to seek asylum. Due process, no matter what you think of our immigration policies, due process should matter to everyone. The fact that that's being completely disregarded should be terrifying. The fact that that's not seeming to matter at all to this federal administration, that is not the answer to immigration policies. That is fascism. And in order to combat fascism, we need action. And you all are in really important positions of power. You are all in positions where you can help us take action. And you're hearing from an incredible sea of community members here who are pleading for just that.
You have been listening to Radioactive on WERU Community Radio 89.9 FM and streaming and archives at WERU.org.